Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrara. Pleased now to be joined by Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist. And, Doc, if I know you, you're still rocking those New Balances, aren't you?
Yeah, Jimmy, I've been rocking them all afternoon in between trying to decide who's on first and what's on second with regard to college football and NASCAR. And it's good that these New Balances have great grip, because I start to go in one direction, then I find out something else, I go in another direction. Right. But they're comfortable, they're good. Sharon and David and all the folks at New Balance of Knoxville will take great care of you. They go over there, they're wide, they're stable, they're comfortable, they're good for your knees and your hips and your back, which is why I wear them. Why I've always worn them after wearing some others for a while and having some situations and issues. The good news is you go over there, they'll give you a perfect fit every time. They'll take care of you. And over 75 different styles and models that you choose from. So I love them. And I basically live in them when I'm traveling on an airplane or when I'm just out walking around town.
So, Doc, it was on Friday evening the SEC comes out with its schedule of the crossover opponents, the two additional opponents. The day before, the Big Ten came out with their schedule. The week before, the ACC had come out with their schedule. But I guess more pointedly with the Big Ten, they come out with a schedule. 36 hours later, they're talking about shutting down the season. What happened? What happened between releasing a schedule and showing optimism and then making it look like you are not going to play?
Well, that's exactly, I think, what Jim Harbaugh and Ryan Day and some of the coaches, you don't often see Michigan and Ohio State coaches agree on much. But I think both these guys today, there was a tweet from Jim Harbaugh and just a little bit ago Ryan Day from Ohio State said the same thing. I don't know how you have a schedule for a season and then 5 days later decide maybe you're not going to play. And who makes that decision? You know, how is it made? You know, somebody asked one of the coaches, since last Wednesday when the schedule came out, has there been a sudden outbreak this year somewhere in the Big Ten? No. Has there been an incredible surge or spike of cases in one of the Big Ten conference states? Nothing out of the ordinary. No, that's not the case at all. Well, then how does suddenly things change from last Wednesday to today or yesterday or this afternoon, whenever it was reported that, falsely reported, I may add that the Big Ten has canceled football. And I think it comes down to leadership or lack thereof. Someone somewhere in that conference, I know the presidents are the one to make a decision, but the conference commissioner, the football coaches, the athletic directors, there's a lot more at stake, I think, than, you know, there's a lot at stake in so many ways in terms of safety, consistency, for students and athletes, and the economic viability of some of those programs and conferences up and schools up there. So interesting that you would have that kind of flip flop happen, you know, in the Big Ten.
What do you think is going to happen with the Pac-12?
Well, I think the Pac-12 is, my guess is, let me just say, the easy answer there is I don't know. I don't think anyone knows. My guess is that the Pac-12 will sit back and wait and see what happens at 6 o'clock tonight when the Big Ten presidents do meet. And tomorrow, midday tomorrow, it's been announced just a little bit ago that the Big 12 athletic directors, school presidents, and their medical consultants are all going to meet together. Which I think is a better philosophy, because you're going to get a medical input, you're going to get an input from athletic directors and from the presidents when they all meet, and sort of see what direction they're going. It was reported earlier today by the Detroit Free Press, erroneously reported, that the Big Ten presidents had met last night and had voted in a 12-2 vote to cancel college football. The only two voting to keep it were Nebraska and Iowa. Presidents. That vote apparently did not take place. There was a casual meeting, but not an emergency meeting as it was reported. And also in that report it said that if the Big Ten canceled football, the Pac-12 would not be far behind, and it would be remaining up to the other three conferences, the ACC, the Big 12, and the SEC, as to what they were going to do. Well, that report was wrong, and it has been reported accurately this afternoon, though, that the Big Ten presidents will meet at 6 o'clock tonight, and they will indeed then make a decision or try to make a decision on where they go forward. With that said, about an hour and a half ago, Jim Harbaugh sent out a tweet commenting that they have over 353 tests, or exactly 353 tests that have been given in the Michigan program with zero positives. He said, where's the issue up here? We're doing everything we're supposed to do. Ryan Day just said, the Ohio State head coach just said, we are swinging as hard as we can swing here. I'm paraphrasing, using some of his words. And we are not giving up on the premise of playing college football. So the coaches are pulling in one direction, hoping that the presidents can see, you know, what's important. I thought it's very interesting a few minutes ago, Jimmy, that Scott Frost at Nebraska spoke to his team, and he said, when asked about player safety, he says, our kids want to play. When asked about what they're doing for safety, he said, our kids want to play a college football season. I firmly believe our players, our kids, are safer here with us than they would be in their hometowns or they would be sitting in a dormitory somewhere. We're going to do everything we can to make sure they're social distance, take care of them medically. They want to play college football. When asked at the very end of his press conference after practice about an hour ago if what would happen if the Big Ten decides not to play, Scott Frost said, our president understands the importance of what we're trying to do and how important that is to the town of Lincoln, Nebraska. He said, so if the Big Ten votes not to play, then that will be an issue. We want to play college football, preferably in the Big Ten, but if we don't, we'll find others to play. So that's basically a warning. Is they're ready and willing to play, and they'll go wherever they have to play a game. Now, whether he can do that or not, I don't know. But that's interesting. There's a lot of coaches that are stepping up now in anticipation of what the Big Ten's going to do. And, of course, I think, you know, we all know that we're waiting for the ACC and, you know, to say something. And of course, the Big 12 has a meeting tomorrow. And, of course, you know, Greg Sankey, who I thought maybe had the best statement of the day, he said, I've learned when, you know, basically paraphrasing him, you probably have already told folks, Jimmy, but paraphrasing him, I thought he said the most important two words he could say, be patient. Be patient. That's what I've learned in this coronavirus situation. We need to be patient, look at all the parameters. We are looking at everything we can look at to keep our athletes and our students as safe as possible and continue with the progress as we move ahead. We've already delayed practice. We've already delayed the schedule at the start of the season. Right now, I think it's very important for everyone to be patient here on August 10th when we've still got quite a ways between now and when we're supposed to play.
Doc, Bruce Feldman tweeted earlier that there are reports of Iowa, Michigan, Nebraska, and Ohio State exploring potential moves to the Big 12, kind of alluding to what you mentioned about what Scott Frost had to say. Could you see a potential maybe opt-out in for some of these Big 10 schools, or who knows, even Pac-12, that decide not to play, but then individual schools want to play, sort of like Notre Dame getting a one-year entry into the ACC. Could you see them logistically being able to pull that off if they wanted to do it with the Big 12, ACC, or SEC?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's exactly what people are looking at now. And there's no way. I'm not a lawyer. I don't understand. You know, the commissioner of the Big Ten is a lawyer. I mean, I don't understand how you would do that, but I've got to believe that as important as Michigan, Ohio State, Nebraska, and Iowa are to that conference. And by the way, I don't think Wisconsin's far behind. I think that you look at how devastating it would be in some of these towns. It was alluded to in that Scott Frost press conference. You know, there's places like in Wisconsin, you know, and Lincoln, Nebraska, and Tuscaloosa, Alabama. There are towns that basically, you know, base their livelihood on college football being played and done the right way, obviously, and the safest way. So I think it'll be very interesting. I think that if Michigan, Ohio State, Iowa, and Nebraska, maybe one or two others, Wisconsin maybe among that group, go to look at a model like that, the Big Ten needs to take notice, or they may end up being the Big Four or Big Five pretty soon.
Doc, the topic of a bubble has been extensive, and how college football can't pull it off because of the amateurism aspect of it. I saw a tweet trotted out earlier that every SEC school has a nice either on-campus or nearby hotel that they could potentially do something like that. Because of the amateurism aspect of it, do you think that rules out any sort of potential bubble or quasi-bubble that they could try to pull off as a last ditch resort to try to make this happen?
I think at this point in time, I don't know that you're gonna hold yourself. If I'm an SEC commissioner or an SEC athletic director or an ACC or Big 12, and I'm worried about what kind of bubble the NCAA restrictions may put you under, you're doing what's best for your program, for your school, and for your athletes, and in reality, for your conference. You're trying to keep not only your kids safe, but the kids you're about to play safe. I think you throw that any kind of restrictions, bubble limitations out the window, and you do what's right, and you let somebody else try to challenge you in a court of law or in a court of public opinion. And I dare them try to challenge in a court of public opinion when you're trying to do what's right for these kids and their families and everyone involved to keep them safe. Yeah, I don't think that could be a problem. I think financially, if you can play, and even if you play with minimal fans or no fans initially, get the game played, get the television revenue, ESPN, CBS, everyone needs that revenue from sponsorship to put these games on television. The schools need the revenue. You know, it's a win-win for them if you can keep these kids safe. And I agree with Scott Frost, and I bet you most coaches you would talk to say that this kid here, this wide receiver I've got from somewhere in Georgia or somewhere in Tennessee, is much safer here in our program under the tutelage of our medical staff and our educated, coronavirus basically aware staff than they are back in a dormitory somewhere or back at home, back in their hometown. I firmly believe that's the case.
That's Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist. When we come back, we'll have more. And if you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
The king of beer, the king of sports. Live from the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk with Vince Ferrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Let's go to the phones where Jim is our first caller. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Hey, Jim.
You know, I wanted to talk about the scheduling. And the thing I do not want to hear, if we ever hear an explanation from the league on how the two teams were decided upon that each team was going to add, if we ever get an explanation, I do not want to hear some BS explanation and insult my intelligence and you guys' intelligence regarding the way it really is, which was simply to protect the better teams, and you stuck it to the lesser teams. It could not be more obvious. I want that explanation. Tell me that is the truth. And the fact, the best proof is that there was no pattern or consistent basis for assigning those teams. Some teams actually got the next two on their rotation. Some teams got one of their next two on their rotation. And some teams got none on the next two of their rotation. So just tell me the truth. Dr. Punch, I would like your opinion on just the scheduling in general, particularly with Tennessee adding Auburn and Texas A&M.
Jim, you asked the same question I've asked myself since that schedule came out at 6 o'clock on Friday. I shake my head trying to figure out. I realize how difficult that's got to be, and you sit down with a Rubik's cube and figure that out. But I'm like you. I'm not sure there's anything I could say that's radio airable right now that would allow me to explain what was done or how it was done. I have an opinion. It would not put me in good political standing with some of the people who made that decision. I don't know. You know, I certainly don't want to point the finger and say, boy, it looks like you're really sticking it to this guy and this guy and really giving this guy and this guy and this guy a pass. But that's exactly how I feel. And I'm not sure how or why you could do that. And I'm also not sure what you do about it, quite honestly. But it's like fighting City Hall. But my goodness, it just doesn't seem like it was a lot of consideration was given to being equal and fair across the board.
I think what you said, Vince, earlier, as far as the strength of schedule on the top teams dropping down toward the bottom with the additions, hit the nail on the head. I don't think you could have a more obvious look at this and not say that you're not trying to protect the better teams and you didn't want to give them another loss on their schedule, which would hurt their postseason chances. I'd love to have a postseason. And you basically stuck it to the lesser teams because you knew they weren't going to get there anyway. And I would just like to hear that. Do you guys think we will ever get any explanation of how the teams were decided?
Not this year.
No.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And, you know, Jim, you're right. If you're going to protect the top teams, somebody's got to pay for it with those difficult games. And Arkansas certainly got it. Now, Missouri I didn't quite have as much of a problem with because going into the game additions, Missouri was tied with Texas A&M for the easiest strength of schedule. So they had an opponent record of 28-36 in conference games going in, and so they got hit hard, obviously, with LSU and Alabama. But then a team like LSU, who was 11th in strength of schedule, they added Missouri and Vanderbilt, combined 4-12, and they also had a very bad schedule. So I think it was definitely to protect those top teams. The numbers are that way, and you know, Tennessee and LSU had a very similar strength of schedule. LSU got it much easier than Tennessee, and Georgia and Florida ended up having it easier than Tennessee did, although Tennessee didn't surprise me a ton because they were already in the bottom part of the league in strength of schedule. Their bad teams on their schedule offset their numbers a little bit to where I wasn't surprised that they got two tough teams.
Well, I do know right now the bigger issue is whether we play or not rather than who we play. So I know that's the bigger issue, and we'll find out relatively soon, I think. Guys, I appreciate your thoughts. Have a good weekend. Stay safe.
Hey, Jim, we appreciate it. Thank you. And when we come back, we've got several things to touch on with Doc Punch, including Kevin Harvick getting a sweep over the weekend, and also some news about Joe Gibbs. So we'll talk about that when we come back. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk, 99.1, the Sports Animal.
The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Himes on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferrar. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. New Balance Knoxville carries everything from footwear and a wide range of size and widths to versatile offerings of apparel and accessories. So whether it's running, walking, or simply looking, a wide selection can help you reach your goals. New Balance Knoxville. Doc, wanted to ask you about this. There had been a story that I read that said that one of the concerns about proceeding with football is that the virus can cause some heart damage called myocarditis. What do you know about that situation?
I know that's been a trip that some enlargement of the heart, cardiomyopathy, the muscular enlargement has been a noted sequelae of several people, especially some of the athletes that have gotten the coronavirus, and so they've had a large heart. You know, I'm not sure the specific tie. I've seen it alluded to. I've not seen specific research that they can attribute directly the coronavirus to a myocarditis, inflammation of the heart muscle, or an enlargement of the heart after you recover. So I know that has been that information has been floated to a number of athletes who were looking at playing versus not playing or opting out, and saying you put yourself at risk for long-term cardiac issues, lung issues, but I'm not so sure that the specific connection has been made, although there have been several players. One, I think, defensive lineman in particular, who's been diagnosed with a cardiomyopathy following a bout of the COVID-19.
All right, Kevin Harvick over the weekend in Michigan. He sweeps the Saturday and Sunday races. What a great weekend for Kevin Harvick.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin looked unbeatable both Saturday and Sunday. A doubleheader in the two-mile oval, D-shaped oval in Michigan, Motor City, in the backyard of the manufacturers for Ford Motor Company and General Motors. Obviously, it's about winning. It's a pride moment for winning, even though the fans weren't there. Normally, the folks from Ford Motor Company are there, although they weren't allowed there either because of restrictions on distancing. But Kevin Harvick, he started 20th on Sunday after winning on Saturday, drove directly to the front, did not win the first stage, but basically won five of the six stages in two races to dominate and get his fifth and sixth wins of the year. And that basically ties him with Rusty Wallace for 10th all-time on the NASCAR win list with 55 career victories. Harvick's done that in only three-plus seasons there, driving, for Stewart Haas Racing. And by the way, all six of Harvick's wins have come since they've gone back to racing, returned to action on May 17th this year. So, and with all due respect to Ernie Banks, who said, let's play two, I think Kevin Harvick and Victory Lane said, let's race three here, because he's already won two in a row at Michigan. He'd be happy to run one on Monday up there and win three in a row. And I believe he could, because he was almost untouchable.
Looks like Joe Gibbs Racing has parted ways with Eric Jones and will go with Christopher Bell, which, Doc, I think was expected.
Yeah, I mean, Eric Jones is a veteran driver who has won at Daytona. He won the Southern 500 at Darlington. This year he had not won. He had run well. 25-year-old from Michigan, experienced driver. A year ago at the end of the season, Joe Gibbs put his arm around him. Toyota said, we love you. Remember, you've got Denny Hamlin, who's won five times this year, Kyle Busch, who's yet to win, and you got Martin Truex Jr., who's won once at Martinsville. So three of the four, Eric Jones and Kyle Busch were two of the drivers that had not won there. And the question was with Christopher Bell, who was basically one in the farm group for Joe Gibbs Racing. He's a young driver that was driving for Levine Racing. And Bob Levine announced this week that he is going to sell that team and close down at the end of the year. And so that means Christopher Bell would have been a free agent if someone doesn't grab him up. So Joe Gibbs says, okay, do we lose Christopher Bell, who's a rising star in the sport? Do we let him go somewhere else, or do we make room for him? We're only allowed to have four teams, and so that was a very difficult decision for Joe Gibbs. And he made it and told Eric Jones on the Friday afternoon of this week that we're not going to be here next year. Eric Jones said, I was blindsided, to quote him, didn't expect that to happen. And Christopher Bell has now been signed to drive the 20 car in 2021. And Bell will become the, I think, fifth different driver to get in and drive that car. Tony Stewart, Joey Logano, Matt Kenseth, Eric Jones, and now Christopher Bell, who's from Norman, Oklahoma, and has won about everything he's sat in, going back to the early years of the Chili Bowl, Eldora. He was an open wheel champion. His upbringing is very much like Tony Stewart. Kid's a winner no matter where he goes. So I guess Toyota and Joe Gibbs couldn't afford to let Christopher Bell go and had to make the tough decision to let Eric Jones leave and bring Bell in for next year.
Let's go to the phones where Reed is our next caller. Reed, you're on with Doc Punch.
Hey, Doc, how are you guys doing today?
Well, thank
good,
you.
Good. Reed, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. I've got a question about sponsorship. I was noticing in the race yesterday that J.J. Yelly did not have any type of sponsorship on his car. How can these guys afford to race like that?
Well, what happens, Reed's a great question. What happens is the owners of some of those cars basically get money. If you enter the race and you run toward the end, you can get $50,000-$60,000. And if you you don't have to pay buy but a few sets of tires, now you don't have to practice and qualify, and you give the driver, you may pay him 10, 15, 20 grand to start the car. You can walk away and you don't wreck the car. You can walk away with $10,000-$15,000 in your pocket. It's a roll of the dice. You don't go there to win. You go there to start the race, fill out the field, and run as long as you can, as safely as you can, and not to hurt your engine and not to hurt your car. If you tear up the car or you blow the engine, you lose money. Otherwise, you can make it and make a little bit of money if you're very careful. Now, you're not going to be competitive, and you're basically got to be very careful not to get in the way. But that's how you do it.
So basically, NASCAR's just letting these other cars that don't have sponsorship and do not have a lot of money to fill up the field. Is that what I'm seeing?
Well, that's one way to look at it. But in all fairness to some of these owners that have these cars, and I know some of these guys and they're friends of mine, you know, they don't have the sponsorship, not because they're not out here looking. And they firmly believe if they can race a year or so and put 20 grand in the bank after every race, and maybe every five or six races, they can rent a better engine, buy more tires, and go for it. Maybe they'll say, like, okay, we get to Martinsville or we get to this track or that track. My driver's really good there. We can get a top 20 finish. We're going to go ahead and roll the dice and put all our eggs in this basket, and then we're going to have to just to race the next four races to make sure we put some money in the bank, and then we can do it again. They're trying to get there. They're not trying to come in and just steal money and put it in the bank and walk away. I think they're really trying to build their own team, but this is the way they have to do it.
Who is the owner of the J.J. Yelly card?
I'm not sure if that's a Derek Cope owns one of the cars, the former Daytona 500 winner, I don't know which one that is. There's several different guys that own Phil Parsons has owned a couple of those. Derek Cope has owned a couple of those, and you know they've told me that. Let me think. Who else? The guy that was the I'm blanking on his name. He ran a couple of cars in the Xfinity series for a long time. Didn't have a lot of sponsorship, but they were there every week and ran. And occasionally ran pretty well, but that's what he told me. So we put enough money in the bank that we could run one week. He said, "Who knows if we can just get noticed? Maybe we can get a little sponsorship, and we can people can jump on our car and get their name on the entire side of the car for a fourth or a fifth of what it would cost to put them on a top 10 car."
All right, Doc. I appreciate your answer. You have a great week and be safe.
Thank you, Reed. Thanks for calling.
Doc, I want to ask you in terms of the competitive balance between Toyota, Fords, Chevys. What do you think about the way they've all competed? They all have representative in the top 10 in the points race, but what about that competitive balances with those three?
Well, I think Toyota dominated the season last year and with the most wins by far, then Ford, then Chevy was just struggling to be competitive week in, week out. Chevrolet made a change with the body style of the Camaro. This Camaro is much more, to use the terms they use, it's much more balanced in terms of aerodynamics. The engines are still good, but, you know, they still struggle to be able to get to victory lane on non-restrictor plate or non-tracks like Daytona, Talladega, where it's a big tapered spacer and a certain package for drafting. I think Toyota on certain tracks still has the overall balance package. I think Ford is really stout in the engine program. The Roush Yates engines, if you watch what Kevin Harvick's done the last few weeks, the joke in racing is Harvick handles really well on the straightaway, meaning all he does is push the right foot down on the throttle, and he handles so well because he's only going straight. But that horsepower is there. He just blows by people, as do some of the other Fords. So I think Ford has the horsepower. And they're really close on the balance with this Mustang, last year being the first year they ran the Mustang. And then Toyota probably is overall has the best balance front and back with their Camry, and maybe they're a close second in horsepower. And I think Chevy is still third, but they've certainly made strides this year over what they were a year ago.
Doc, I just saw this. Dondi Plowman at UT tweeted some photos, and she said, this afternoon I met with our football team and staff to have an open conversation about playing football this fall. At the end of our discussion, I asked if they wanted to play football, and the answer was a resounding yes. She said, this group of student-athletes have worked hard to prepare for the season amidst detailed and strict health and safety protocols. I can't wait to see them on the field in Neyland Stadium. Something similar happened at Wake Forest, where their president talked to the players at practice today. What's your reaction to that?
I think that's leadership. I think that's what I commented about, the leadership or lack thereof we're seeing in maybe the Big Ten with some of the disconnect that the presidents up there have. I don't know, and I'm not throwing stones at the Big Ten schools as a whole. I think that in Iowa and Nebraska, maybe at Ohio State, maybe at Michigan, there's communication, but it sounds like there's a disconnect between the coaches and the president's offices at Michigan and Ohio State, especially if those presidents vote against college football. But I think the President Plowman, Chancellor Plowman, I think that goes to show you that she wants to lead from the top, and she doesn't want to just, even though she probably has the utmost respect, and why wouldn't she, of the opinion of Philip Fulmer, she wants to hear it directly from the players. And if I'm Philip Fulmer, I want those players sitting in front of the president of the university or the chancellor saying, okay, let's hear what you have to say, and from the players themselves. And I think that's fabulous. I think the same thing with some of the other schools that have spoken up, and I think that's exactly what leadership should be. That's why I'm so proud of what Greg Sankey did today by saying, amidst all the people trying to make decisions on having college football or not having college football here on August 10th, you know, he says, be patient. One thing I've learned in the coronavirus is be patient. We're going to try to make this system work, and we firmly believe that as time evolves, that we have a system to keep our players and our students safe and maybe be able to move ahead. You know, that's why we've moved everything back. You know, we're not in a crunch to do a knee-jerk reaction and make a decision. So I like hearing that. And I think that's a great statement by the leadership at the University of Tennessee to be able for her to meet with those players and say, tell me how you think, what you want to do, so I sort of know where you're coming from. I think that's wonderful. That's definitely leadership with a capital L.
That's Dr. Jerry Punch from ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, which carries everything from footwear to apparel to accessories. If you want to join us, 656-9900. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Heim. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Tell the truth. Isn't this better than hearing Boston's More Than a Feeling for the 10,000th time? 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Hines with Vince Ferrar. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN, brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Let's go to the phones where Anthony is our next caller. Hello, Anthony.
Hello, how are you? Hello.
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great. I just wanted to call in and share a little uplifting story related to NASCAR. I am a member and a moderator in a mullet group on Facebook. And one of our members, Keith McGee, is the first ever disabled veteran to race a NASCAR race. And that was his dream growing up. I think he's raced maybe four races in the truck series. And he kind of ran out of funds. So our group, it's got about 50,000 members. We all pulled together and we're trying to get him sponsorship down in Talladega this year in October. And if so, it will be the first time a driver has made it to a race through sponsorship through a social media site.
Wow, that's fabulous. Keith McGee's his name, is that right?
Yes, sir. It's Keith McGee. He's from Alaska, and he's also the first Alaskan driver to race NASCAR. He got his start on a indoor go-kart track in Alaska.
Right.
And some he held a bunch of records. Nobody could beat him. And then somebody said, hey, you want to drive a stock car?
Wow. Does, now, he says he's a disabled veteran. Does he use, like, a hand control? What's his disability?
He had a traumatic brain injury. I think in 2005 he suffered a traumatic brain injury in Iraq.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Well, so you say he raced. Where was his start? You say he's already made one start in NASCAR in the Truck Series.
He had two top 10 finishes back to back last year. I'd have to look up and tell you exactly what tracks they were, but he's raced a total of 4 races, and we're looking to try to get him down to Talladega this year. And the mullet group, which I know is kind of an odd thing, but it's kind of a brotherhood, and everybody in there is wanting to support this guy and help him achieve his dreams. And we are currently shooting a mullet themed calendar, and I'm going to go up to the NASCAR Speed Park this week, and I'm going to do a Dale Earnhardt themed shoot for March number 3.
Good for you. What a great group. Well, that's fabulous. I appreciate you letting us know that. I will look that up and see if I can't find out from some of the folks at NASCAR. I'll be over in Charlotte this week at NASCAR. Okay. See if I can pass that along. Let them look up a little bit more about Keith McGee.
Yeah. The name of the group that is trying to sponsor Keith is called The Mullet That Changed My Life on Facebook.
Okay. The Mullet That Changed My Life. All right.
Yeah, check out The Mullet That Changed My Life on Facebook, and you'll see all the details on there.
Anthony, that's fabulous. Thank you for calling and letting us know. We appreciate that.
Thank you. All right, from Anthony, let's go to Jerry. Jerry, you're on with Doc Punch.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey,
Jerry.
Hey, Doc, I got in on a conversation sometime last week. I think it was concerning Bubba Wallace and talking about all the different opportunities that he's got for next year, options or whatever. And then I heard that Richard had offered him, I think, ownership, part ownership in the team or something. But that's all well and good if it is. But I just noticed the last several races, that car's had Victory Junction on it, which I'm assuming that, you know, that's Adam Petty, tax-free organization that they wouldn't need a tax write-off. So if that was that hot a property and driving for Richard Petty, for Pete's sake, well, having that on, that just leads me to believe, I don't know for sure, but it just leads me to believe they didn't have sponsors for those races, so... As I say, if he's that hot and driving for Richard Petty, I would think they have sponsors lined up. So what do you think is going on with that team?
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with the schedules and the contracts they had early in the year. They probably didn't have sponsors for certain races, and they agreed to put Victory Junction Gang on there to help out that camp that was named after Adam Petty, Richard's grandson. And also, I think the team itself, you know, has struggled financially. And if I'm not mistaken, Bubba mentioned yesterday on the telecast that he already has a very small ownership percentage that was given to him with that team back in 2019. But what he's been offered by Andrew Murstein, who's the co-owner of Richard Petty, Murstein's an investment banker in New York, an investment businessman in New York, he's been offered a significant, whatever that means number-wise, ownership stake in that team if he stays. Now, it's also reported he's also been offered, maybe offered, a ride for Chip Ganassi Racing in the 42 car that Kyle Larson was booted from early in the year with a possible McDonald's, the fast food chain sponsorship. And there are some other things that apparently are in the works as well. But I think it's very difficult to get those contracts signed and get that money, those monies on those cars right away. They're looking at, because of how the corporate structure works, I think they're probably months away, and that's probably why you saw the Victory Junction Gang camp on the Petty car. In fact, there are even Hendrick cars that have Hendrick his dealership situations on the car. They don't have full sponsorships at some racetracks. That's just sort of the nature of where the sport was 6 or 8 months ago, and it's basically contracts for some of these races they're going through right now.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for the answer there. But like I say, most of these sponsors, about all they're getting is out of these things, I think, is tax write-off. I can't believe it. Most of them, they don't even know who they are. I don't know who they are or what they are. I guess apparently somebody does, but they don't seem to be that much in or so. All the branding on the car is so small, I don't, can't even tell what who the sponsor is. So anyway, guys, I know you're about out of time here, so thanks for taking the call.
All right, we appreciate it, Doc. Just a little bit of time left, but Indy 500 is going to race without fans, correct?
Yep, Roger Penske wanted to run it with fans and vowed to do that. And even with the spike in the coronavirus, he went from 100% to 50% and agreed to go down to 25% with very strict protocols on face masks, shields, et cetera, et cetera. The local hospital there, IU Indiana, in Indianapolis, IU Health Center, said no, they wanted it to be without fans. Very difficult decision by Roger Penske, considering the fact that that track has, since World War II, has not missed a race, with the exception of the World War itself back in the early 40s. But he had no choice. Here are his two choices. You can hemorrhage money by running the race by running a race with no fans, meaning that you don't get parking, you don't get concessions, you don't sell tickets, so you just pay everybody to work there and pay the purse. Or you hemorrhage race teams by not having the race, because there's probably at least four or five teams, including the A.J. Foyt's team and others, that said if they didn't run the Indy 500, which is what their sponsorship that they booked for the season was based on, because of the exposure that race gets worldwide, if they don't run that race, they don't keep their doors open. So he has to run the race, even with no fans. He has no choice, even though he's going to lose a sizable amount of money. Now, he reduced the purse from $15 million to $7.5 million because of no fans. But still, they're going to run it and do the best they can. But it's sort of sad that this was the case. I mean, they said in Marion County, Indiana, the COVID coronavirus cases have tripled in the last month and a half or so. And so he was just trying to abide by and as best he could the best wishes of the local medical center.
Doc, we appreciate it. Always great to catch up with you. We look forward to visiting with you again next week.
We'll talk next week, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Doc.
Thanks, Doc.
Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville.